Hey everybody, and welcome to the New Gamer Nation podcast. I am your host, Pilot, and today we have with us Slacker.
What's up?
And we have special guest Trevor from BagoGames.com.
Hello everyone.
And we want to welcome everybody. Hope you had a good week. You know, let's just kick things off and start with what we are playing. So why don't you start us off, Trevor? What are you playing?
Well, I'm still playing a lot of the same stuff I have been the past couple weeks. Sort of in a not really a slow gaming period for me, but I'm not really rushing to finish anything. There were a few titles, two titles that kind of caught my eye this week that I decided I'd at least check them out. One of those was Metro 2033, and the other one was Need for Speed Hot Pursuit. With Metro 2033, it was sort of just a new title that I hadn't heard of before, and it's sort of just a your typical shooter type game with a really interesting, like, post-apocalyptic, you know, almost like a Fallout-esque air about it. And then obviously Need for Speed. I used to play Need for Speed when I was younger. Hot Pursuit, they add in cops, so it's sort of a chase, you know, let them chase you kind of game. So that's really all I've been doing, and eventually I'm going to finish Duke Nukem Forever. I don't know when. Maybe, you know, maybe this week, maybe next week, but, you know, that's still on my list. So that's where I am right now.
You're still working on Duke Nukem, eh?
I haven't touched it.
Really, it's kind of like a chore, huh?
It's, you know, and I'm not even getting paid for it. So it's one of those bad chores your parents makes you do, and then they give you 25 cents or nothing. So I'll finish it eventually, and maybe by the time, you know, Duke Nukem 2 comes out or whatever they're gonna call it, I'll be done with it.
So now, what made you get into Metro 2033? I mean, that's definitely one of the older titles around.
I know, I was saying it's sort of new. I understand it's been around for a while. I guess it's because I read an article on a DLC that's coming out for it. It's like, I cannot remember. It's like last night or something like that.
That's a whole new game.
It's actually a whole new game. Okay.
Yeah, it's the sequel to that.
Oh, speaking of DLCs, it's not a DLC. It's actually a sequel.
Yep.
So I like, you know, first-person shooters, and I saw that article and thought, why not play the first one and get ready for the second one? Now that I know that it's the second one, I guess I'll be ready for it.
Oh, fair enough. What did you think of Need for Speed? I mean, that got a lot of good press when it came out. A lot of people really enjoyed that. Did you feel the same way?
I like the option to have two careers. You can either be the racer, and you can unlock all kinds of cars and whatnot to try to get away from the police, and then you have to deal with obstacles like, you know, the police throwing, what do they call those things that pop your tires out in the street, or the strips, the helicopters flying all around you. That's pretty exciting. And then the second career, you actually get to play the police officer, and your whole goal is basically just to crash into these people. Not to mention, you're probably killing tens of people on the road because there's like minivans with kids flying by you as you're trying to ram them off the road. So you're just going down the road 100 miles per hour, and it says, knock them off the road. So you knock them, and they do like a 360 turn, and they roll. And the ethical ramifications of this game, if it were real, is just horrible. But I really enjoy playing the cops. I actually don't like the other career where I'm trying to get away from them. I love playing the cops. So was there a previous Hot Pursuit game in the past? Have you guys had experience playing a past one with police officers, or is that something new?
No, that was part of the original game. The game was part of I think it was Need for Speed 3 Hot Pursuit, which came out in like the turn of the century there.
But yeah, it sounds so old.
back when they invented lights.
Yeah. No, I mean, like right around, you know, 99, 2000 came out, and it was much like that. This is just kind of an improved version of that.
No, I like
it. Oh, it's, yeah, I definitely found it enjoyable myself. I played a little bit of that, and I like the cops as well. I didn't like playing the street racers. I like the cops.
Well, now, what is the appeal about, see, I would think that, see, I've never played the game, but I would wonder, you know, what's the appeal about playing cops versus, you know, playing a criminal in this case?
Well, I would say that it's all the tools that you have available to you. As a cop, you have the option to call in a roadblock, or to, you know, have them drop spike strips up ahead, or have, you know, just be able to really pursue those guys, however, by any means necessary. And that's the fun part for me, at least. I don't know. What about you, Trevor?
Well, you're also sort of like the Dukes of Hazzard. You've got these awesome vehicles. You could care less about, you know, who you kill or what laws you break. You pretty much can do whatever you want to stop the people. So it's sort of just freedom, and you're not a police officer. You're like this crazy guy driving a Lamborghini, and you're trying to stop these other crazy people who are constantly racing. And that's another thing. Why are they racing constantly? And why do you need a special task force to stop them from racing? I think there's a problem with this society if they're constantly racing. And if I knew a cop in a Lamborghini was coming after me, I probably would stop racing because I don't want to be tipped over or thrown off a cliff.
So it sounds like to you guys that the enhanced cars and the enhanced tool set really sort of outweighs the appeal of playing a criminal in this case.
Yes,
yeah, I would say so.
Fair enough.
All right, so speaking of playing games, well, what have you been playing?
Well, right now I've been playing, the only noticeable change from last week is that I've dropped Brutal Legend, and I've started playing the Uncharted 3 beta.
So what made you drop Brutal Legend?
Well, I mean, right now I still have the PlayStation Plus membership from the Welcome Back package, and so I thought I'd take the opportunity to really really give the Uncharted 3 beta a shot and see what it's all about. And right now it seems like it's, you know, your basic over the shoulder shooter, and it's got a lot of a lot of elements of that, and it's got a couple interesting tweaks. I feel like the level design really puts you in some interesting situations.
Go on about that. What's so good about the level design?
Well, for starters, I mean, when you start playing the beta, there are two levels that are available to you. One of them is an airplane hangar. And at the start of the airplane hangar, you play one of two teams. One team is piloting a cargo plane at takeoff, and the other team is trying to chase down the cargo plane before it takes off. And so, depending on whether you're in the heroes or the villains, the objective is to get on the cargo plane or stop the other team from getting on the cargo plane.
So how is that much different than anything else you've played?
Well, really anything else I've played in terms of shooters has just been very, very stationary. So you've got one team is in a base of some sort, and the other team, you know, is trying to take over the base, or, you know, I thought that the idea of just the chase scene in general was kind of unique.
Okay. So you've also been playing Uncharted. So how would you compare Uncharted with Uncharted 3 demo?
They feel basically the same. They feel basically the same, with the exception of a couple minor control differences. Like, the buttons do a couple different things in Uncharted 3 versus Uncharted 2. Like, I think that in Uncharted 3, you use L1 to throw grenades versus Uncharted 2. I think it's L2. But I mean, in general, they play basically the same. You know, just, you know, the ledge controls when you're climbing up ledges, everything just feels basically similar.
So do you feel that the Uncharted 3 does a good job as implementing multiplayer with what started out as a single player game?
Yeah, I feel like it does a solid job, but I still feel like it has a ways to go before it's a legitimate shooter. I feel like there's elements of, say, Battlefield Bad Company that are not implemented in Uncharted 3 beta before I could say, hey, this is actually like a legit shooter. Right now, it's just kind of like a fun Uncharted diversion. I don't know if that makes any sense to you.
All right, so I'll just jump in there and let everybody know what I've been playing. And generally, it's been the same as far as Shadows of the Damned. I'm getting pretty close to the end now, and so far it's been pretty awesome. It's been an excellent game. I definitely like it a lot, and it's definitely one of those sleeper hits that a lot of people may not play, but everybody should play. You know, the humor is great, levels are really fun, you get really cool weapons, and, you know, the boss battles are really fun too.
Now, what would you say is the best quality of it?
Probably the humor. It's a pretty funny game. It really appeals to a lot of people. Well, not, I wouldn't say a lot of people, but it definitely appeals to a good amount of people that are traditionally gamers. The interaction between Garcia and Johnson, his sidekick, is really pretty funny. and level design is really good, and boss battles are really fun too, especially if you like a little bit of strategy in your boss battles. Just all around, it's a good game. It's a lot of fun. There's collectibles and upgrades, and you know, the characters are really good, and the voice acting is really good. It's like excellent.
Now, oh, go ahead, Trevor.
You're saying that it's a sleeper hit, though. So what you're describing to me is probably a really, really good title. I don't understand why it may go under the radar.
I think a lot of people would get turned off if they played a Suda 51 game before and they didn't like it.
Okay.
So if you didn't like No More Heroes, you would probably go and say, oh, another Suda 51 game, I don't want to play this. Or if you played like Killer 7, which I didn't like at all, you know, you would say, oh, I hate it, so I'm not going to play this. But, you know, it's something that it does some Suda 51 types of things, but it doesn't do it to the point where it becomes annoying or it becomes a turnoff to some people. And it's also not put out by, well, it was put out by EA, but it's not getting the kind of press that you would see around a bigger game.
It doesn't have like the marketing push as Duke Nukem had, or
Battlefield or anything like that. Like, this is definitely like one of the EA titles that are just kind of
sort of like a Mirror's Edge, maybe.
Yeah, possibly. You know, something that is an excellent game. It's got good mechanics, a good core, good control. You know, everything about it is totally, completely solid. But because it didn't get that marketing push that other titles would get, it's going to fly under the radar. But I know I'm not the only one that's been liking this game, so I think that may boost things up a little bit. And really, you know, only time is going to tell, and especially when this thing gets a price drop, you know, you'll see a lot more people liking this.
Do you think it could potentially go greatest hits with a price drop?
I believe it could, based upon the game mechanics alone. Whether or not enough people are going to get their hands on this, that remains to be seen. I hope so. It's good enough.
Yeah, I have to say that I looked at a couple of trailers of the game, and everything that Joe described seems spot on with the humor, the action. It just seems like an all around solid game, and you know, it's kind of its own game. Like, you know, it's an over the shoulder shooter, but it also has, you know, I feel like the humor really sets it apart, where you have like a lot of, you know, the jokes are just like over the top and funny. It sort of feels like Robert Rodriguez made a shooter.
Yeah, it's exactly like that. You know, there's a lot of off-color humor, but it's still an excellent game. Still definitely worth picking up and playing. And it's something that I plan to play through at least one more time. You know, just because I'm playing it on hard now, so you don't always get to appreciate all the finer details. So once I get through that playthrough, I want to play through it again and really see what I've missed.
So would you get all the trophies in one playthrough, or do you have to play through it multiple times?
No, you have to play through multiple times.
Okay.
There is a trophy for playing it on the hardest difficulty, but the difficulty trophies don't stack. And there's one for playing it on each level of difficulty.
Oh.
So if you play it on hard, you'll get the hard trophy, but you won't get the medium and the easy trophy.
I see.
So you got to play through it three times to get all the trophies.
Wow. It's a demanding game.
Well, it sounds a lot worse than it is. The game itself is not incredibly long. I think it's only like maybe 8 hours or 7 hours to play through on a hard difficulty.
That's including boss battles?
Yeah, that's including boss battles and everything else.
Sure.
So you can kind of run through it, especially on easy. Like once you get used to the game, you know where everything is. Like you know what you have to do. You could probably blow out a playthrough in 5 hours, maybe less. You know, and as you're playing it on hard, everything takes more hits to die. So that adds a lot of time onto things. But, you know, it's definitely worth a look. But I've also been playing Duke Nukem Forever. Again, I kind of feel the same way you do, Trevor. It's just kind of whatever, and hopefully I'll finish it sometime soon.
Eventually in the next 12 years.
Maybe. We'll see. No promises.
Well, that's how long it'll take him to come out with another one.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. 12, 20 years. Let's hope.
And lastly, I've been playing a budget title that some may know as the Earth Defense Force, Insect Armageddon.
Okay.
This was a kind of a cult classic on the original Xbox. Well, not the original Xbox, the Xbox 360, but it was a cult classic. It was one of those budget titles that came out, but a ton of people loved it, and it kind of got this weird following, and that just kept building and building. And they came out with a sequel, and this is the sequel that was released on all the platforms, well, all major platforms. I haven't put a ton of time into it, but I have put, I'd say, 2 or 3 hours into it. And it's definitely a budget title. I'll come out and say that right from the beginning. The graphics are okay. Not anything super, especially for this, where we are in the console lifespan. But, you know, it's all about shooting insects. You know, these giant ants and giant spiders and giant robots have come to invade the Earth, and you play as an agent in the Earth Defense Force trying to repel all the invaders. So there's giant ants and spiders everywhere, and you just shoot them, and that's all there is to it.
Well, it sounds like it's okay for what it is. Like, as long as you're not expecting, like, a state-of-the-art modern title, you won't be disappointed.
Yeah, if you like the first one, you're going to love this one. It's the same thing. There's a lot to like, and especially for the price point. You know, the MSRP is only $40. So for $40, it's not a bad game. You know, if you go into this expecting a $60 title, then you'd be mistaken. But I don't see why you would, since the game is so cheap to begin with. So as far as that's concerned, it's a good game.
Mm.
You know, I don't know that I love it to the point where I would recommend it to everybody, but I would say if the original one appealed to you, or if you're just looking for a straight ahead vanilla kind of shooter that has the ability to go co-op, it's decent. It's a decent game. So this will bring us to our next segment, which is a particularly hefty segment, if I do say so myself, but we'll discuss how we feel about the recent Supreme Court ruling, Brown versus the EMA, where this was originally came out of the state of California, where Governor Schwarzenegger has proposed a bill that would toughen up and increase censorship on video games. I won't get too much into it. I'll let that pan out in the discussion. But why don't you start us off, Slacker, and why don't you give us your reaction to the ruling?
I'm not really surprised by any of this. I mean, I'm not. You know, I just think that the decision to restrict video games should not be done at the state or at the national level. I mean, why should anybody else tell me how to raise my kids? And, you know, what they're talking about is imposing a $1,000 fine on retailers who sell games deemed 18 and older to minors. And I just think that, you know what? Like, it's just too much. Like, why does the state need to be involved in such a matter?
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but weren't there going to be stricter label requirements too?
Absolutely. That you know, games that were deemed too violent were going to have a 2-inch by 2-inch black and white 18 sticker on it.
Yeah, I think that's similar to the Australian system. I think it's the PEGI, which is they control all the ratings down there, and they kind of have big stickers on their games, you know, letting people know, you know, what content is in that game.
But I don't know about you guys, but, you know, a big 2-inch by 2-inch black and white 18 sticker on there, I mean, I know what games I'm going for. Like, that's the game that I want to play.
Well, what about you, Trevor? What is your core reaction to this?
When I first heard about the law, I had the same reaction that Slacker had, basically the libertarian view that a parent's judgment is better than the state's, and that it should be really up to the parent to decide. And so it's almost an overreach by the government. But now that the Supreme Court has knocked it down, I sort of wanted to take a different look at it. And after watching a few shows and a few news programs on it, they really were targeting games like Mortal Kombat or games that have explicit sexual nature or, you know, brutality. And maybe I don't agree with the way they were going about it. You see with, you know, cigarettes have warnings on them that they may cause cancer or may cause problems with pregnancy. And other products like alcohol says you shouldn't drink and drive, or, you know, drink and drive responsibly, or whatever it is. So why not apply it to games? But I definitely don't agree with the fine. I definitely don't agree with punishing people for playing video games or punishing parents or stores. But I do think we have to look at the larger picture, that 5-year-olds shouldn't be playing Mortal Kombat. and what should we do about it as a society?
Yeah, I mean, my core reaction was similar to you guys, that I was happy that this didn't go through. I definitely didn't agree with the whole premise of restricting video games in any kind of way or inducing fines on the retailer. I think what was going to happen was that retailers were going to either severely restrict or make it extra difficult for people to buy video games that are, you know, mature in nature. So probably having to produce a couple of different forms of ID, making it difficult for people like us to buy those games, or just completely stop selling those games altogether and therefore reshaping the kind of games that were available to us. I mean, all this is hypothetical, but it really could have had a major impact on the future of video games. And I'm a big advocate for free speech. I mean, being able to say what you want and do what you want is part of why America is what it is. And for people to go in there and completely censor what we're seeing and what we're doing really goes against everything that we stand for. But, you know, you do bring up a good point in that, how do you take care of the parent issue where you make sure that kids aren't going to be playing these kinds of games? So how would you handle that, Slacker? What do you think the answer is to making sure that children don't play these kinds of games?
Well, let me start out by saying I have a question about it, because, I mean, they already have the ESRB ratings on them, where that has a recommended age range. So doesn't that sort of prohibit it anyway? I mean, like, I guess what I'm wondering is that the seller looks at the ESRB and says, hey, wait a minute, you're not old enough to buy this, and you can't buy this. How does that work?
Well, the way it stands now is that the ESRB is completely voluntary.
Uh-huh.
So games technically don't have to go through the ESRB to release their games,
mm-hmm.
even though it is an intra-industry kind of a thing, where if you didn't go and put your game through there, you'd be looked upon badly in the industry as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
But that also, because it's voluntary, the sellers don't have to sell their games only to the people that it's appropriate for.
Mm-hmm.
So it acts more of a guideline for parents to say, well, your kid wants this game. Well, this is who should be playing the game.
Right.
But since it's voluntary, there's no enforcement on either end.
My experience with retailers is that most of them do enforce it. I know with Walmart, with Kmart, maybe even some other retailers, that when I was younger, I couldn't buy games without having an adult standing there. But if the adult was there, they would let me pay for it and buy it. So I think you're right that the guidelines seem to already be there and the protections seem to already be there. So maybe this was overkill.
Well, what this was really going to do was add a penalty to those that don't conform to the system already in place. And it wasn't so much what it does as far as what it could have done. You know, like I was saying before, if a retailer doesn't want to take a risk in selling games to minors or having their games go to the hands of minors, they could decide not to sell these games altogether, and then everybody misses out on the opportunity to play them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was really the fear of this bill passing.
Right.
So, you know, let me pose the question back to you, Slacker, you know, the original question. If this isn't the way to do it, then what is?
Well, I would be okay with making the ESRB mandatory. I think that's a pretty fair thing to do. You know, you put a – just like we have movie restrictions, right? Like all movies go through a viewing board and they decide what age group the content is appropriate for. So I would be okay with making the ESRB mandatory and putting the power in the retailer's hands. Just say that, you know, well, you don't look like you're you're of this age group, or, you know, produce some identification to prove to me that, you know, you're old enough for this game. I would be fine with that. I think that's as far as you really need to go. I mean, I know that if I were a parent, that I would at least have one eye on what my kid was doing. I wouldn't leave the television as a babysitter. I think that, you know, it's important as a parent to have some responsibility in this. And I think, to me, it stops with, you know, if you just have the ESRB mandatory, that would be fine by me.
So what about you, Trevor? What changes would you make to this bill that would make it, according to you, appropriate?
I agree that with Slacker that it should be mandatory, the ASRV. But I also acknowledge that a lot of parents do park their kids in front of the TV and don't exactly pay attention to what they're doing. So maybe instead of creating legislation that punishes retailers that may or may not exist, I don't know if there's some case study out there that shows maybe local retailers are not enforcing the ASRV or following it. But I think more importantly, maybe public education, teaching parents that, or kids even in school maybe, that you don't want to be exposed to this. Maybe this isn't healthy for you. Like take more of an education approach rather than a punishing, you know, fines and law approach. It's sort of my feel about it.
Yeah, I tend to agree too. I would also take things a step further and allow the government to kind of come in to the ESRB and double check their ratings and how they're doing things so that the ESRB would have a stamp of approval from the government. So when you go in there, you know that the government came in there and looked at it and they agree that this kind of a game is an R-rated game or an AO kind of a game or, you know, T for teen or whatever.
But let me jump in here because, I mean, do you feel like there's anything at fault with the current ESRB rating system?
I don't. Personally, I don't feel like there's anything wrong with the system as it is.
But then why would you add, you know, why would the government need to add an additional stamp of approval here? Why does that add authority to it?
Well, not that it adds any particular authority to it, but obviously the government feels like this is something they need to get involved in. And I'm saying if they got to get involved, then this, I would be okay with that level of involvement.
Okay.
I don't think that anything needs to be changed. And I definitely feel like parents are the ones that should be doing the censoring. Now, if you don't feel like your kids should be playing a certain type of game, the guidelines are available widely, and you can check the packaging. And if the packaging says this or that, then you know exactly what you're getting into. And even when, you know, friends go to other friends' house to play games, you know, it's up to you to know who your kids are talking to.
Of course.
And who they're hanging out with. And if you don't want them playing those kinds of games, if you approach the parent and say, I don't want, you know, my son or daughter playing that particular game or these types of violent games, a normal person would say, okay, I appreciate that and I'll enforce that. So why they feel like they need to get involved is beyond me. But, you know, if assuming that the government has to step in and take a hold
right.
of things.
You're saying that assuming they have to step in, you'd be okay with them sort of not enforcing, but backing up the ESRB's rating system.
Right. And I would also make them, you know, make retailers themselves enforce the ESRB ratings. I know that I went to Target the other day to purchase a video game, and I had to produce my driver's license because it was an M-rated game. And I thought that was a really good system. I mean, they scanned my driver's license, and, you know, it went through the computer, and it made sure that I was as old as my license said I was.
See, I would be okay with that.
So do you have any final thoughts on this, Trevor? What do you think?
Well, with them swiping your license, it sounds like Target at least, and hopefully other retailers, I believe Walmart may do the same thing, are already doing it. And I guess the, you know, Supreme Court, the law of the land, has decided that this should not be enacted. So, you know, we're speaking in hypotheticals, we're speaking of what could have been, but the Supreme Court is really, even though it is a conservative court, you know, more pro-corporate court, I think any court, even maybe a liberal court, would have made this decision, because the slippery slope that this could have led to, like what you said with games being banned from stores or stores deciding not to sell them, I think that was a real, real problem. Let's strengthen the ESRB, let's make it mandatory, and let's include the parents more into the process, so, you know, 5-year-olds and 10-year-olds aren't watching people get ripped in half in Mortal Kombat.
So what about you, Slacker? Do you have any final thoughts on the issue?
Well, I have two final thoughts. First of all, I like the idea of scanning driver's licenses for games that are mature, but sort of a lesser issue here is that what do you do if you say have like a 10-year-old that wants to purchase a T-rated game? I mean, there's no, you know, nobody's going to really carry around their birth certificate. How do you really make, you know, that sort of becomes a judgment call in the form, you know, for the retailer. you know, because how do you judge how old somebody is? I mean, you know, the driver's license is an easy way to go, but what if you don't have that?
Well, I think the, you know, T for teen is recommended for anybody 13 and younger.
Right.
So if you're showing up to a counter by yourself, chances are you're at least 13.
Okay, but, you know, okay, fine. I guess I'm cool with that.
You still don't have a driver's license, though, unless you're stealing mom's car and you know, driving it down the street. You're 13 years old. I don't think you're going to have a driver's license, but I get your point.
Right, like, you know, if, you know, a 9-year-old or a 10-year-old could still maybe, you know, purchase a game that's intended for an older audience, not necessarily a mature-rated audience, but an older audience.
Yeah, I think that was the whole thing, was just having those people be able to purchase games that were intended for a mature audience. I don't think there's much of an issue of, you know, an 8-year-old being exposed to something that a 12-year-old was supposed to be exposed to. Because those things, the difference between an E for everybody and a T for teen is like maybe some comic mischief or something like that, mm-hmm. which I think a lot of parents are much more comfortable dealing with their children about than, you know, murdering people and all sexual content and all kinds of things like that.
What you're saying is they just wanted to get the big offenders.
Right. Okay. Right. Broad strokes, I'd say.
Right. Right. That's fair. And the other point that I wanted to bring up is maybe sort of another alternative. I mean, we discussed using identification at the counter to prove your age. And we, you know, we discussed, I think, one more alternative, even though it doesn't come to me. But, you know, what about putting a restriction on the hardware itself? You know, so an M-rated game, you have to put in a password and, you know, otherwise you can't play the game. And so, like, me as a parent, hypothetically, I could set up the PlayStation, set it up with a password that only I know. And my child, you know, even if he buys an M-rated game, still has to have the password that I know, that only I know, to play the game.
Well, those already exist for both the PS3 and the Xbox 360.
Okay.
Parental controls have been there for a while, so if you wanted to do that, you're certainly at liberty to do that.
But aren't parental controls controlled within the game themselves for blood or certain effects and not for the entire game?
No, the parental controls for PlayStation are universal.
Really?
And they won't let you play according to the MSRP rating on the box.
Wow, I did not know that technology existed.
Yeah, the games are encoded with their ratings.
That actually, it reminds me a lot of the V-chip in television sets.
Yeah, it's similar technology.
Hmm. I don't really like the idea. What if your child paid $60 for the game and now it's useless? Or what if you forget the password? Or I don't know. I'm almost thinking of this like a child would. I'd be really pissed off if I got home and I couldn't play the game that I just bought with my friends.
Yeah.
And I probably bought it because I knew I couldn't have it because it was the no factor. So looking at it from a child's point of view, it sucks. But I could understand as a parent, if a really young kid and you bought the PlayStation or the Xbox for them and you want to control it. But, you know, if the kid bought it himself and it's his and it's his money, it just you run into a few issues with that idea.
Yeah, but that becomes a personal issue rather than something that the U.S. government has to address.
Right. And one thing that I was going to say is, you know, from a kid's perspective, yeah, you just wasted $60. You're sure you're not going to do it again. I, you know, like, oh, well, I don't know the password for this. Oh, darn. Like, you know, and as a parent, like, the parent doesn't give the password to the kid. I mean, he's not going to go and try and buy an M-rated game again. Problem solved.
All right, so that's going to bring us to our first break. So stick around, and we'll be back soon. So let's get right into our third segment of the podcast, and that is the PS4 plans were released. PlayStation has been known as coming out and saying that the 10-year cycle is the only way to go, and every console is going to have a 10-year cycle. Yet they just came out with plans that in 2012 we can be looking forward to getting a new console on the market, which considerably cut down the amount of time that they were saying that the PS3 would have had. The PS3 premiered in 2006, so 2012 only makes it 6 years. So why don't you start us off, Trevor, and let us know what you think about these PS4 plans being released.
Well, first off, I think that they're reacting to the market forces. Basically, you have the Wii U coming out next year. You have Microsoft working on the Xbox 360 successor. And I think PlayStation, Sony probably thought that if they waited till 2014, as it's stated in this article, then they may have risked being left behind, or maybe having a Dreamcast release. I almost think that releasing the system by next year is a good thing. If we've learned anything from Sony, it's that every time a new PlayStation comes out, they introduce a new technology. Last time it was Blu-ray. You know, times before that, it's been better graphics. So I feel like it's great for the PS3 also, because it's going to bring the PS3 prices down and probably increase PS3 sales in the long run. But I also don't think that this is going to hurt anything at all by releasing it, because you saw that I believe they're still making PS2 games, and they're still going to be making PS3 games for the next 10 years. So I don't think it's going to hurt any of their existing systems. I actually think it's going to complement it. How do you guys feel?
Well, something that hasn't been touched on here is I think that it was just a rumor. Like, this seems like it's, I don't think anything's definite yet. But does anybody else have any opinion on that?
Well, it's been in and out. There have been reports saying that a PS4 is coming out. It's definitely going to happen for the same time period. And then Sony came out and said, oh, no, that's not true. And then it got released again. So it's kind of back and forth, back and forth. So because it's been leaked so many times, it's safe to say that there is at least some truth to this.
Okay. I mean, like, I feel like this is just Sony's play to stay ahead of everybody else. I mean, you know, there was obviously pressure because the Nintendo's releasing a successor to the Wii, and Microsoft has a 360 successor in the works. You know, Sony right now, in my opinion, is ahead of the market, and while I feel like the Wii U, I think, is the Nintendo successor, might catch Nintendo up to Sony and Microsoft, I feel like this is them sort of preempting things. They're trying to stay ahead of the pack. They're trying to just keep things rolling and keep things, stay in front.
See, I don't think that Sony really views Nintendo as a legitimate competitor. They've come out and said that right point blank. I mean, even Jack Trenton, who's the head of the SCEA, has said, you know, they don't view Nintendo as a competitor, and they even mock it at times. So I think, if anything, this is really a kind of a power play to show Microsoft that they're not going to beat them to the punch again. Because if it wasn't for the Xbox 360 coming out as soon as it did, I don't think that Microsoft would have such a strong following. You know, if the PS2, or actually if the PS3, rather, came out before the Xbox 360, you'd see a much bigger shift in, you know, who's really leading the sales. You know, because in the early days of the PS3, the Xbox 360 just completely dominated the PS3 in every aspect as far as sales are concerned. You know, they sold more consoles and they sold more games. But now you're seeing a kind of a leveling out, and PS3 and Xbox 360 kind of sell about the same amount. I do think that I don't think it could be a bad thing, but I do think it could be kind of premature, because I do remember reading that there's a lot of movement on the removable media front. Mm-hmm. And I think that if they waited another 2 years, I'd say, they'd really be able to take advantage of some technology that, you know, these other consoles that are already in the works wouldn't be able to take advantage of, and maybe even lower the cost of gaming for a lot of people, which could be a big issue. So, you know, what do you think?
I don't know. I still stand by what I said. I agree with what you're saying. I think that they are trying to stay ahead of the pack, and maybe it is just a power play. Maybe they won't actually release it. I know I remember when the first report came out, the first report I read that they were working on it, it turns out that the team that was supposedly working on it was working on the PS Vita. So maybe they're just putting the team together now. Maybe it's not impending. And maybe if they did wait, there would be more technology that you were just talking about that they could bring into the system. But I've heard rumors of them developing a new laser technology using a purple laser. So who's to say that they haven't already invented something new that could be pushed to market now or next year?
What about you, Slacker? What do you feel on the issue?
Well, one thing that caught my attention from the press releases is that the PS3 successor is going to feature motion control. And I'm kind of lukewarm on motion control right now. I feel like that it's kind of a cool add-on, but I'm still more button-oriented, where I still like having a controller in my hand. And I realize that feature motion control, I'm sure they're going to have games that support both motion control and a handheld controller. But I just wonder if by feature motion control that you're going to get games that are sort of less, that there's something taken away from a game if you don't use motion control. And I hope that's not the case. I mean, I'm kind of more, I'm more controller oriented.
Well, we've already discussed motion control to death, so we don't think we need to get into the motion control aspect. I think everyone would agree that we're all controller people.
Yes.
So instead of getting into the motion control aspect, let's discuss the strategy of ditching the Move this early in its life cycle. You know, do you really feel that the Kinect kind of control scheme is really the way to go, and it's far superior to having a Move type of control scheme?
Well, but let's I want to jump in here. I mean, one thing that, you know, it seems like all these next gen systems are backwards compatible. So who's to say that they're ditching the Move?
Well, it's not to say that they're going to ditch it completely, but if they're going to put in a camera that's going to do what the Kinect does,
right,
then I don't think there's much room for the Move, no?
Of course not. Of course not. I mean, you know, if they're going to put in a camera, then the Move is kind of like left for what? Like it's kind of on the side. Like it doesn't really do anything.
Yeah. I mean, maybe that they would allow that camera to kind of take the place of the PlayStation Eye,
mm-hmm,
on top of, you know, being able to use the Move. But it's kind of like using a Nintendo controller on your PlayStation 3. It's just completely outdated. It wouldn't make sense to have both. You know, if the camera can do everything that the Move does without the Move, then why have the Move?
Right, right, right.
You know, but considering how much money that they've spent and how much marketing they've spent and how many games they've forced the Move into and Move support into, you know, what do you think is either the strategy or your general feeling about, you know, getting rid of the Move so early?
I think that Xbox with the Kinect kind of upped the ante on them, and they realized that a stupid looking stick with a ball on top of it was really not going to cut it. When I first saw the PlayStation Move, I thought it was an ice cream cone with a light in it. I really didn't know what I was looking at. So this might, you know, and I don't know if Xbox or Microsoft is planning on creating anything like the Move. This might just be competition doing what it does best, forcing their competitors to match them and create something better. So I don't feel horrible that the Move might go away. I don't think it was around long enough for anybody to get used to it or to get attached to it. But you know me, I don't want to be dancing or doing jumping jacks to play a video game.
Yeah, no, it definitely seems that it's very premature. I mean, especially since, you know, the Move has only been out a short amount of time, about a year, a little over a year now.
But will you miss it if it goes away? I won't.
Well, I on a personal level, of course not. I mean, I don't think any of us would miss it.
Good riddance, right?
But you know, but they're going to the, you know, to a Kinect kind of style. But I even question how successful is the Kinect, and is it successful enough to say, you know what, checkmate, I got to put this on my console now. I mean, I don't think that Kinect games are selling all that well. You know, anything outside of Dance Central, I don't think is doing well at all.
Right.
I think it's too soon. I think we're many years out from having anything like, I don't know if you guys have seen the movie The Gamer with Gerard Butler, where the kid's standing in his room and he's just moving his arms and controlling a guy on the TV screen. I think we're a long way from having a first-person shooter or third-person shooter running on Kinect. But I think if we eventually have that and they perfect that technology where you point your hand forward and the gun fires, or you clench your front finger or something and it fires, then I think that people will adopt it and it will probably be successful. But if Dance Dance Revolution type games is all they're going to come out with, then it might as well just go away now. But I doubt that. I'm pretty sure they're probably going to be looking at the hardcore gaming in the future, at least.
So I'll give you the final word on this, Slacker. What is your feelings?
Well, I mean, you know, if the PS Move goes away, I won't miss it. I certainly think that while motion control is the future of gaming, I don't think that there's really much appeal for the hardcore gamer. Like, it's like, you know, like we discussed, it's just really games like Dance Central, Dance Dance Revolution. I mean, but there's not really a whole lot of appeal there. Certainly at E3, there were a couple titles that intrigued me. That used motion control, like some of the Tom Clancy titles where you can take apart your guns and customize your guns. I thought that was kind of cool. But, you know, to base an entire game around motion control, I just don't think we're there yet.
All right. So let's move over to the final segment for the podcast. And this has been getting a lot of press, at least online press, and that is the new media streaming bill that's been coming out, which is officially known as S-978. Basically, what this bill is, suggesting is that copyrighted material produced by anyone, not just video games, but movies and music, any copyrighted material is going to be much more stringently enforced in the online community. So say, for example, you liked a movie that came out 20 years ago, and you posted a clip on your YouTube site, and the owner of that movie found out that you posted that clip, you can report that, and you can potentially serve jail time because of that. You know, it's obviously not for the first offense, but the potential is there for you to serve up to 5 years in prison for copyright infringement. And it puts a criminal penalty to using copyrighted material. And why this is significant for gaming is because YouTube is a huge part of video games in general. I mean, people use YouTube as a way to talk about video games, discuss video games, show off video games, just everything in and of itself. So in restricting copyrighted material, it's going to hurt that community quite a bit, and maybe even destroy it altogether for fear of violating these terms. So why don't you start us off with your reactions, Slacker?
Well, yeah, just before I give my reactions, the specific language of it is that anybody that streams content valued at $2,500 or more, 10 times or more in a 180-day period will be fined and possibly face criminal charges. That's the exact language in the bill.
Right.
And my reaction is that it's a little extreme. I mean, I really feel like this is going too far. If people really feel a certain way about, having content on their sites, I mean, right now, the system that's in place right now, I think, is fine. I mean, you can remove the content, and, if necessary, if for repeat offenders, you can issue fines. I think that calling people, or basically what this bill is saying, is that people that repeatedly stream, certain content are now considered felons. And that, to me, is it's just overreaching. It's just, to say people that stream inappropriate content are felons is just, to me, ridiculous.
So do you personally use YouTube at all in your gaming habits?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there have been a couple times I've been stuck with games, once or twice with God of War, and once or twice maybe in Final Fantasy 13, that I just kind of used a video walkthrough to progress in the game a little bit.
So, do you think that the YouTube community itself would take a big hit from this?
Absolutely. I mean, I think it goes without a doubt. I think that, because basically now, people, I mean, the fear of being prosecuted as a felon, basically, that fear itself is going to, you know, take away from the community. People don't want to be treated like a felon. That's a pretty heavy charge.
So what is your core reaction, Trevor? How do you feel about this?
I definitely think it's overstepping. I use walkthroughs online. You know, I got caught on Dead Space 2, and I looked at, they had chapter 1 through 12, every single chapter, walkthrough on how to finish each and every level, how to beat bosses. I thought that was great. I use YouTube for game reviews, just to check out what other people are saying about a game. And I think really this bill flies in the face of really what's going on in our society right now. Everything is opening up in our society, and there's free flowing information, and YouTube and blog sites like our own have basically introduced so many people to video games, and it's almost a form of free marketing. And I think that this bill is going to clamp down, just like the past legislation on music and movies has actually caused a backlash within the markets, pissing people off because young kids and normal people are getting fines from the U.S. government or from their states. I think that this could really, really hurt YouTube. I think this could hurt us as bloggers. And I don't see the reason why it's needed.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of this is stemming from, you know, the use of torrents and, you know, just illegal downloads in general. A lot, especially coming from the RIAA and the music industry, they took the biggest brunt when it comes to illegal downloading. And they, through all of this animosity, they probably tried, you know, got somebody to write up this law and got, you know, their interests passed through into this law. I could see the point of protecting their content. I mean, how would anybody feel if you know, spent a ton of cash and a ton of time and a ton of effort into producing some content, and when it's released, you get half of what it's worth
right
back in value, while the other half goes free amongst the interwebs.
But I'm not sure if we're talking about that. I think we're talking about streaming footage, like previews or trailers or things of that nature, right?
Well, we're talking about stuff that wasn't meant for general distribution. So if I stream, you know, we'll stick with video games. I mean, even though this reaches into movies and music as well. But, you know, if we're talking video games, I could stream an entire playthrough on YouTube, you know, from beginning to end, the entire game.
Mm.
And that's what they're trying to target, is completely chopping that down and just having whatever they release for general distribution is okay, and everything else you need permission, and if you don't have permission, you're getting a strike.
But see, so you know, let me jump in here. I don't see the, because even like if I watch an entire playthrough, I mean, you know, where's the, I would still maybe want to play a game. I mean, I don't see why watching a playthrough and actually playing the game seem like two different things to me.
Well, what if somebody wanted to play the game just for the story? They just want to know what happens because of, you know, let's take this for example. A new Uncharted movie is in the works.
Right.
So say somebody that's not really that strong of a gamer says, oh, well, Uncharted movie is coming out. Let me see what the game is like so that I'll know what to expect from the movie.
Uh-huh.
So they can just go online and watch a playthrough for as long as they want.
Uh-huh.
And not have to pay a dime.
Right.
But how is the company losing money?
Because that was a potential sale.
But maybe it wasn't. Maybe the kid just wouldn't have cared or done anything about it. I feel like they're looking. They might be looking at like what you just said. They might be looking at, oh, we're losing this potential sale. I look at it as, oh, look how awesome this game is. I'm gonna go buy it. And I can't tell you how many times I've gone on YouTube and watched a playthrough of a game and then went and bought it because I wanted to see what I was buying first. It's sort of like a demo or a trailer. I understand that those are approved by the company. They want you to play those. But if I were to record that demo and then put that on YouTube, I'm somehow losing them millions of dollars. I think that's ludicrous.
I'm firmly with Trevor on this one. I think that, you know, playing the game is an experience in and of itself, and watching it just, you know, it's passive. Like, you know, you're watching it. You're not actually playing it. I feel like there's an excitement level watching it, but I think it's taken to another level playing it. And I would just always be in the mind frame where, like, if I watch something and I really like it, I would have to play it for myself.
I totally agree with you guys. I feel the same way. But if this particular law passes, it's going to have a profound effect on the YouTube community because it is going to be applied universally, whether it's for video games, music, or movies. I think that through music and movies is a better example of what, of the kind of streaming that would ruin the experience.
Right, right.
You know, why buy a song if I could just go on YouTube and play the song from YouTube?
Okay.
Or why buy a movie when I could just stream the movie from my computer? I mean, I definitely agree that games have an element that you can't show through YouTube. But because of such a direct impact it has on music and movies, I definitely think that it could have an impact on video games as well.
Right.
You know, video games is still media nonetheless. So it's not just because it doesn't directly apply to video games doesn't mean that it can't be applied to video games. And the only way around all of this is for you to get permission to do so. You know, if 2K says, I want you to go out and play Duke Nukem Forever, and you post a video about it, and they don't want you to post it with this new law, they can have you take it down. But if they want, you know, everybody posting as many videos as possible, seeing that as a possible marketing opportunity, they can say, sure, leave it on. You know, post as many videos as you want, and you can do so legally. You know, the enforcement of this law is up to the people that are being affected by it.
Mm.
So if your content is up there and you don't care, then nobody has to worry about it. But if they decide to care, then that's where the big issue is going to come through. And to this point right now, no major publisher has come out and said, I don't care what happens with this law, you can post videos of my game whenever you want. Actually, I take that back. I think the only publisher that has done that is the makers of Minecraft. They came out and said that you can post their stuff to YouTube as much as you want. But nobody else has come out and said that.
Mm.
So do you think that the fact that none of these publishers have come out and protected all the consumers, how do you think they really feel about it, given that fact?
They may be behind this bill. Their silence might be a sign that they approach Senator, I believe it was Senator Amy Klobuchar from Minnesota, to sponsor and write this bill. I think if they hadn't written this, they would be out and would probably be pretty upset about it. And that's usually what groups do when someone else writes a law that affects their industry. So if 2K Games and these major publishers were sitting at the table with Amy Klobuchar, then I don't think we are going to hear anything. I think they're just going to keep mum on this and let it go through and hope nobody notices. And so far from what you said, and this is really the first time I've heard about it, it is pretty much going under the radar.
So do you think that this particular bill would hurt the video game industry? And if so, then why wouldn't publishers come out and say, no matter what this law says, you can post our stuff to YouTube and get it out to the masses?
I think in the end, they want sales in the store. And to that end, I think they'll do whatever they can to increase sales in the store. And maybe this is one of those moves. It's the same move that the movie industry has made. It's the same move that major media providers like Viacom did with Jon Stewart's show and Stephen Colbert's show. I don't believe they're on YouTube anymore because of them. They believe that it is better to control their product from production to sale than to have us peons helping them in any way. Maybe they don't see us as being helpful. I think we're being helpful. I think word of mouth is what really helps the gaming industry. But I think they want to control point to sale.
So what about you, Slacker? Do you feel that the major companies have an ulterior motive when it comes to this?
Maybe. You know, it's certainly a possibility. I think that, you know, they're keeping their mouth shut for a reason. You know, certainly, it's certainly foreseeable that they could, you know, just be not saying anything because they possibly want this to go through and just control everything. They want their hands on production, whether, you know, basically coming from them.
Yeah, I think I tend to agree that, you know, they probably want to control their product as much as possible. And in doing so, they're going to cut everybody out. I mean, people make their livelihood on YouTube. You know, just make videos and their partners, and they get enough people to like their stuff that they get money back from it. And companies may say, well, I want that money. So they may want this bill to go through, and then they could shut everybody out and have an official 2K walkthrough site and have walkthroughs done by 2K employees or whatever.
Well, you know, and additionally, I mean, you know, YouTube puts ads in their videos, and so, you know, I guess, you know, YouTube would be the ones collecting money from the walkthroughs that are in these, you know, these walkthroughs on their site. But, you know, if 2K posts them themselves, then they can, you know, and they can put ads in their own videos and then collect that revenue.
Yeah, as a way to supplement their bottom line.
Right.
I think it's certainly possible. But that is going to bring us to the end of our program. So we would like to thank Trevor for joining us today.
Thank you.
So why don't you let everybody know how they can get a hold of you?
Well, you can follow me on Twitter at Bago Games, or you can go to my website at www.bagogames.com.
And you could also follow us, the New Gamer Nation staff, on Twitter at New Gamer Nation. You can go to our website at www.newgamernation.com, or you can go and like us on Facebook at facebook.com/newgamernations. Please check us out on iTunes and rate and subscribe to the feed. That really helps us out and gets the word out about the show. Again, we'd like to thank our guest Trevor for joining us today. Hope you all enjoyed, and we'll be talking to you soon.